You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. For more in-depth discussion with Brookings experts, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast, also on iTunes and on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
I'm glad the interest in Taiwan remains warm in spite of the weather. I'm Richard Bush. I'm the director of the Center for East Asia Policy Studies here at Brookings, and I'm the proud holder of the CF and Cecilia Yen Gu Chair in Taiwan Studies here. The subject of today's discussion is Taiwan's 9-in-1 elections, which will be held on November 29th. We're at about the 10-day mark, after which polls measuring voter sentiment cannot be released to the public. So this is a good time to sort of look at where we think things are going. We're going to look at three big topics. One is voter sentiment. And to do that, we have Alex Tan, who is with the University of Canterbury down under and came a long way to be here. My colleague, Min Hua, who is a visiting fellow here at Brookings this year, but also teaches at National Taiwan University. And our good friend, Shelley Rigger, who's a longtime member of the faculty in Davidson College and respected specialist on Taiwan politics here. Before we move to our discussion, I have to note with sadness the passing of a good and old friend, Ambassador Nat Palaki. He died in his sleep on Sunday. He was 88 years old. He was a career member of the Foreign Service. He had been ambassador to Botswana. But he gave all that up to be chairman and managing director of the American Institute in Taiwan. He was the third, and he was my predecessor once removed. And he served in that position at a time when Taiwan's democratic transition was begun but not completed. He served from 1990 to 1995. The most memorable story about him is probably when he had to go out to Hawaii and greet President Lee Teng-hui in April 1995, when Lee Teng-hui had not been granted the kind of transit that he wanted, and so he stayed on the plane rather than get off, and Nat went on the plane. But that happened a long time ago. I always found him a source of wise counsel and shrewd insight about the situation in Taiwan. So we will miss him a lot. So now, looking forward to the subject of today, the first topic that we're going to look at is trends in voter sentiment, what the polls tell us before the polls close. So I'm going to have a series of questions for Alex. The first of them is, Alex, what are the polling numbers looking like for the major local races?
For the major local races, I think it's clear, pretty much sort of the numbers are pretty much settling. Of the major races, the ones that are much more really on national TV quite a lot is the Taipei election. And that particular number right now is still showing Cohen's up by double digit right now. Although numbers are also showing that Sean Lian is actually closing a little bit, but not still past that single digit mark. And then the next big election that everybody's concentrating on is the Taichung one with Lin Jialong and Jason Hu. That particular number is a little bit crazy, depending on who you look at. The major newspapers show a difference of about between 6 to 12. But then there's a local Taichung, one that I saw last night, that is under 5% difference between the two. So I guess it depends on who you look at. And then there's the Changhua one that is actually very close to call. Everything else seems to be a little bit more settled now. Jiayi is looking a little bit to the KMT side rather than the DPP side, but still, you know, not more than 5 or 6% though. So that would be, you know, where things are settled right now. The Tainan and the Kaohsiung one, those are quite the DPP territory.
Okay, so those are clearly in the DPP column. Are there some that are clearly in the KMT column?
Clearly on the KMT side, right now I would say most likely the new Taipei, Xinbei Shi, is looking definitely that way. Of course, the outer island ones are looking that way as well. Taoyuan is looking KMT as well. I think the candidate has at least a double-digit lead on the Taoyuan side. But the DPP is predicting that they're looking probably 9, and if they can get past that, that will be really great.
So are there any other surprises that may happen?
Ooh, surprises. Well, the prediction is that there are these voters that might just come out at the last minute.
Yes.
And tip the balance for Taichung, or very likely for Taipei as well. But at the same time, you know, there's Yoshi Kun is also saying that there's a chance that he might actually just get over Zhu Lilun at New Taipei City. But I personally don't see how that double digit can close up so fast. Maybe the current numbers that show relatively large double digit for Kewenzhe and for Lin Jialong and Taichung might go a little bit closer to, you know, probably upper end of one single digit, but I don't think it is enough to bring the lagging candidate over.
Now, our friend Doug Paul, who's in the audience, reminds us that when it comes to Taiwan elections, that what you can learn in the polls is meaningless up until the last 72 hours, that's really when things start to happen and voters start paying attention. Do you think that's true here, or is some of these you said are set?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I actually flew in from Kaohsiung last night. It's besides the Taipei election or the Taichung election, I think this year's voter sentiment, you know, it's not as exciting. You know, you don't see a lot of that excitement, except for council members in Kaohsiung, for example, that every time I go past the campus at the National Sun Yat-sen University, the different candidates are you know, talking to each other, you know, trying to throw mud at the other person. You know, it's like every week there's a new thing on their banner on this particular wall. But other than that, the voter excitement is not particularly there. They've been talking about students organizing buses to, you know, bring these young first-time voters back home to vote. But I have not seen much. Let me say that Zhongshan, Sun Yat-sen University, for example, have students who are participating in that. But I have not seen a lot of that on campus anyway.
Now, the conventional wisdom on Taiwan local elections is that they are not about issues, that they're about scandals, they're about personalities, they're about mobilization. This time, are there any issues that are infecting what are usually issueless campaigns?
Well, the only issue that seems to be coming out a little bit right now is the position on the food security issue, the Shi'an Wenti, you know, that food security issue. A second issue that's coming up, at least in the southern parts, in Kaohsiung, for example, is the dengue fever issue, because there's still quite a bit of outbreak of dengue fever, particularly in Kaohsiung. And the KMT candidate, Yang Xiuxin, is trying to use that as as an issue to bring it to rile up, you know, the KMT vote or undecided vote. But I don't think it's sticking very much. But the food safety issue is one of the big issue that has, for example, the KMT strategy is to try to talk a little bit about that in the Ping Tong case. But still in the Ping Tong race, the DPP is still leading quite a bit there.
Okay. Thank you very much. We may be back to you with some more questions. But my last question to Min, to Alex is a good transition. There are issues going on at the national level, like President Ma is unpopular. There's his ongoing fight with Wang Jinping, spy case with the Mainland Affairs Council, and other things. Do these matter for the KMT as it seeks to conduct its campaign and mobilize its voters? Or are they focused on other problems?
I think the main problem of this campaign actually is, can be under a very, very low in terms of political sentiments. And their supporting rate after Mark got reelected, it's just hovering really, really low, a lower double digits. But the more, I would say, the weakness of KMT strategies, that they don't really think clear about how to fight these campaigns locally. For example, if you look at the traditional, there's a dividing line we call Zuo Sui Xi, KMT actually do not have any local, cultivated candidates. And they all rely on local factions as well as Penguin Renegades. Low strategy cannot win elections locally. There's only one exception, which is Chen Yizhen, which is a very big enterprise rooted in Jiayi City. And she actually is quite charming and have some political experiences that under Ma administration. So that's the reason why KMT could still maintain Jiayi City. But other than that, it's dismal for the KMT to maintain, to have any competitive powers down south. In the central parts, I think KMT did not think clear also too. For example, in Zhanghua, the reason why the race is so close is because there is a split in the Penguin side. The Huang Wenbing actually is the daughter of Huang Shichen. And originally Penbu, there is also internal split because they have star county magistrate called Zhuo. Sorry, I forget. Yeah. So, but actually, what KMT did not really, really work on is that how they can appeal to the, economically or policy speaking, to propose certain, really beef that make people want to support them. So it's all political. It's all faces, and they lose certain momentums. So they just hang on to their incumbent advantages to try to have a minimum leads in the central parts. And so if you look at the northern parts, it's even worse. Look at the Taipei cities. It's definitely a 55-45, it's traditionally speaking, in terms of political blocks. But KMJ in our pool shows that we kind of have a lot of support from light pen blue sides. And their support is because the Xiong Lian actually start criticizing Ma after he got nominated. Xiong Lian tried to make up with the Ma's relationship in order to work on his campaign. But in fact, that strategy even hurts Xiong Lian's supporting race. So I would say, overall speaking, Penbu did not think clear how to win this election. And so it makes the election from typing now is really bad for Penbu. But it may be a good thing for the Penbu side, but we'll come back to that later. Yeah.
You may not know the answer to this question, and that's fine, but it occurs to me that, you know, these problems with the Penbu campaign could be because of candidates and their own decision, because of central party headquarters and how it runs the overall campaign, or it could be sort of local party headquarters. Do you have any insight into that?
What I understand is the central party actually control a lot. Mm-hmm. So the locally, in terms of the candidates, they try to distance away, but they cannot actually distance. Yeah, for example, you look at the Jilong. Originally, the central party wanted to stand away, but the candidate comes up, there's a scandal, and they enforce to nominate another one. But it just shows that the local one won't give up, and there is no, this is just conflicting the local branches with the central party. So it makes the Jilong city, suppose should be a easy win, now it will be is a doom to lose. Yeah.
Now, one could make a hypothesis that there are a couple of individuals that have a big stake in the outcome here. One is Julie Lun in Xinbei, and what that means for the KMT's nomination for the presidential election. The other is Tsai Ing-wen, who one might say if the DPP does better than expected, that that would benefit her in terms of her positioning herself for 2016. I mean, I'm not sort of making any assumptions about whether these two qualified individuals want to be president of Taiwan. It seems like it's a terrible job. they might have other things to do with their time, but...
Paradoxically, I think if Pan Bu lose badly defined, which is losing Taipei City as well as Taichung City, then it might be good for Zhu Dilun. Hmm. The reason is that if Panty really lost badly, there will be heavy pressures for Ma Ying-jeou to initiate the power transition process, to trying to actually put the powers, have Zhu Dilun have more room to operate. If KMT just lost Taipei or Taichung, it would kind of make KMT think that under Ma's leadership, there's still certain hopes, and still under the central party's control. So if that is the case, is that it would be really bad for Zhu Dilun. And the reason I say that is Zhu Dilun is not typical KMT candidate. He has a very good relationship with the opposition party too. In fact, half of his relative is Min Jin-dang. And Zhu Dilun is, although coming from academics, is not really so academics. He can actually manage the local mm-hmm. interests very well. For example, there are a lot of interests in Taoyuan County. It used to be very bad. There is a county magistrate just assassinated like 20 years ago, very badly, Sa Shiye. Zhu Dilun can actually blend those interests and kind of making opposition and incumbent very well in interest-wise. So one thing is that Zhu Dilun is not like Ma, is a politician who can actually manage to have good image, but down below, he could also kind of make the interest-wise politics kind of solvable. So what I'm saying is that Zhu Dilun could benefit if KMT have a very bad loss. On the other side, Tsai Ing-wen, I think since the Sunflower Movement, Tsai Ing-wen kind of sitting there and thinking that it's the right time for her to actually have the chance to win. But I think there is still a lot of doubts when it comes to national elections, particularly for the president. Because she has not very clear view about how the close relationship should put forward, and she has not had very definitive opinions about how to solve the trade issues. So there are a lot of doubts, I think, put on Tsai Ing-wen when 2 years later. But I think so far, Tsai could have a very comfortable, political wise that she can expect that at least 9 seats. He would control the political leadership in the penguin size. But what the challenges way for her actually is just like last time, how she can propose really convincing cross-strait policies to convince all the voters in Taiwan.
Okay. I'd like to turn to Shelley now, and I first want to give you an opportunity to comment on anything you've heard so far that you'd like to comment on, but then I want to turn to the Sunflower Movement.
Okay. Yeah, I think this last point about Julie Luan, he is definitely an interesting character. And your comment about Taoyuan County, you know, we really do have to kind of look at, first of all, you have to look a long time back in the man's life history to get to his days as an academic, although I guess he's kind of sidelines a little bit. But he definitely did kind of plunge into one of the most difficult but yet promising municipalities in Taiwan and seems to have done a good job of that. And I remember meeting with him right after he started in Taoyuan as a Taoyuan Xianzhang. And he told me that he could never leave Taiwan or he could never have a vacation in Taiwan, that he always had to leave the country in order to have vacation because it was so dangerous to be the Taoyuan Xianzhang. So I don't know if that's true or not, but someone who could survive, actually, that's a good qualification to begin with. So it does seem to me that no matter what happens, the way he's kept his distance from Ma and the way he's kept his distance from Party Center definitely means that he's somewhat insulated from the effects of the election overall.
On to the Sunflower Movement. That refers, of course, to the movement that took over the Legislative Yuan back in the spring in protest to the process and content of the service trade agreement. So that was only 8 months ago. Is it having a resonance in these elections? In what way are the parties trying to take account of this new phenomenon in Taiwan politics?
Right. I think, you know, one of the ways that it's tempting to look at these elections as a kind of midterm election in Taiwan, a referendum on Ma's performance. And I understand the temptation to do that, but I think Alex's commentary reveals that it's really not so much a referendum on national policy issues. This is, in fact, a local election. And that these kind of organizational factors and the challenges that Ma has had in managing his own party and the electoral strategy and so on, in that sense, it has national coloration. But it's not going to be, you know, I'm going to go out and vote for the DPP to show my resentment of Ma Ying-jeou, because Ma Ying-jeou is not on the ballot. And in fact, very few people who are even close to Ma Ying-jeou are on the ballot. The people on the ballot are local politicians who are well known to their constituents. So in a sense, I think if there's been a referendum or if there is to be a referendum on Ma's presidency, it was the Sunflower Movement. Mm-hmm. And the social reception of the Sunflower Movement, when I talk to friends from Taiwan, especially people who either participated in or were very enthusiastic about the Sunflower Movement, they put a lot of emphasis on the failures of this movement. You know, we didn't get everything we wanted, or you know, the police beat people up at the Executive Yuan and so on. But I think another way to look at the Sunflower Movement is as an astonishing display of restraint, and not sort of self-restraint, but politically restrained restraint on the part of the regime. You know, it's hard to imagine many other countries in which the legislative chamber would be given over to demonstrators for a month, and that the resolution would involve really minimal repercussions for the demonstrators, but very significant repercussions for the leadership. So I think what we saw was this kind of very physical, embodied display of dissatisfaction with politics as usual through the Sunflower Movement, the unwillingness of many senior political and media figures and organizations to sort of full-throatedly go after the students, the ambivalence of the response, the broad popular support demonstrated through these big protests on the weekends in support of the students. I think that sent the message. Something's got to change. But this particular election is not really a good opportunity to make those changes, because none of the people running has much to say about how we handle cross-strait relations, what we do about how the legislative UN operates, and those, so the national issues are kind of detached from this local election. So I think the referendum may have happened already back in the spring. So I would be reluctant to overinterpret the results of this local election for kind of national politics.
I know you believe that the Sunflower Movement represents a new force in Taiwan politics. And, you know, the local elections aside, how do you think the two main political parties are accommodating or sort of addressing this new force?
Yeah, I think it's really hard for either political party, especially in local elections, to address this sort of new political energy, which is almost apartisan or anti-partisan. I guess it's really anti-partisan. The DPP would love to be able to find a way to get ahead of or to appear to be the party for the Sunflower Movement. And they're, in many ways, their ideology and their kind of orientation is more congenial to the preferences of these activists. But as a political institution, the activists are terribly skeptical, deeply skeptical of both political parties. And so that really makes it hard for the DPP. So individual candidates in individual, mostly county or city council races, so sort of the second or third level down from the ones that we've been talking about so far, may represent the Sunflower Movement more, but for the national party apparatus to find a way to absorb or express the energy of the social movements, it's not just the Sunflowers. I mean, this has been building for years. We had the anti-media monopolization movement was a huge movement, critical of both parties, but particularly critical of kind of blue forces in the economy and politics. But there are also really, really weird bipartisan kinds of social movements, like the one about conscription and the abuse of military conscripts. There were blue-leaning and green-leaning people involved in that movement. So what you see, I think, is this kind of welling up of frustration with both parties that is very hard, I think, for either party to kind of get a noose on and ride.
I want to give Alex and Minhua a chance to comment on the Sunflower Movement. And does it have anything to do with these elections?
You know, the only way, I concur with what Shelley has actually mentioned, the fact that the Sunflower Movement is really, looks very apartisan. You know, it's more like an attack on how the process of decision-making has been going on, particularly with the services and trade. At the local election, I think what the Sunflower has contributed to this particular election, I think, is awakening the young people in trying to say that, hey, we need to participate, we need to vote, because we can make a difference. And that's one reason why the much of the organization of the youth vote and try to the first time voters is really based on a lot of it as from some of the activists that participated in the Sunflower Movement. So several universities are organizing donations to rent buses so that the kids can go to go back home to vote. So that's how I see how the Sunflower Movement has affected more in the voter mobilization of the youth vote rather than the issue that it brings, because local politics itself, the discussion that the feeling that I get in Taiwan just these last month is more of a lot of the local issues that are involved are more important than what is happening to the services and trade and that kind of stuff. So, but certainly on the youth mobilization side, I think it's making a little bit of a headway And certainly in the talk shows in Taiwan, they've been talking a little bit about that, because I was watching this talk show and they were talking about, oh, how much it'll cost for a student to go home and, you know, the bus ride or the train ride if you're not in your hometown. So how do they actually lower that cost, you know, for the voters, for the young voters, and say, well, they're donating this, they can rent buses, and, you know, kind of like that. So it's more on the mobilization side of the young vote.
I also concur both of you. KMT has already hurt badly in the Sunflower Movement. This reflects in the poor numbers, the younger generations, that the schooling rate is really trailing behind it, hankering a lot. But I want to add a footnote to Sherry's point, which is that why the regime is so, I mean, tolerant, which is that I think Mao never thought that peace not actually has, although they won 3/4 of the parliament seats, and he got re-elected, but actually he got to be cohabitate with Wang Jinping, because Wang Jinping created his own institution, legislative-wise, that there is a caucus negotiation procedures, and that kind of has a very a powerful veto roles that in the legislative process. So Ma every time want to put any legislative bill for war, he needs to negotiate with Wang to a certain extent. But Ma really don't think that it's necessary. From the first day he become the president, he think he got a unified support from the executive as well as the legislative, but in fact he is not. And that would be a very important variable for the next KMT re-election in 2016.
Okay. So back to Shelley for a couple more questions. Do you think these local elections have any impact on Ma's ability to govern, or is that already fixed?
I think that's mostly already fixed, and I think Minhua's point is really, really interesting. The word you used, cohabitation, right? Some of us in this room have had a long-standing conversation about whether Taiwan's constitution is a presidential, semi-presidential, or parliamentary with a president hanging off the side of it constitution. And so on the one hand, I think it would be really interesting if what has happened is Wang Jinping has created sort of durable power in the LY to challenge the presidency, not only with these two individuals, but going forward. I'm also thinking about the Japanese comparison, where Koizumi seemed to manage, you know, both Ma and Koizumi were simultaneously kind of taking on new economic challenges and policy challenges, and also coping with the effects of a new electoral system. And the electoral system that they went from and to is the same in both cases. And what we saw with Koizumi is that initially a lot of things that looked very institutional in nature seemed to be happening. So the Westminsterization of the Japanese diet is how Margarita Esteves Abe has described it. But then after Koizumi kind of went back to the old way, and I wonder if the next president and LY speaker will continue to cohabit, or whether one or the other will fail to sort of pick up the role that's left behind. But I think that's actually a really interesting development that we need to pay more attention to. And then on the issue of youth mobilization, and this is also to the difficulty of really getting some kind of partisan political advantage out of the Sunflower Movement. So you put all those kids on buses and you take them home to vote, and what do they see? They see a ballot that has a DPP and a KMT, in most cases, county or city leader. And then they have all these names, which are county council members, and they have to pick one. We're back in SNTV elections below the level of the executive positions. So the parties are still doing pei piao. You know, they're still trying to figure out how can we make sure that Alex gets 30% and Minhua gets 30% and Richard gets 30% as opposed to he gets, you know, 60% and then the other two get 20% and I'm the second candidate elected. So, and I just don't know what these young voters are going to do with that ballot. It might be that they say, I'm just going to vote for all the ones who are not whatever I'm maddest at, and probably that's KMT. But will they vote for independents because they figure independents are less polluted by partisanship? You know, will they look at it and will they say, well, these are all my parents' old cronies. I'm not voting for it. So that's, I think, the dilemma for the electorate facing this is, you know, they have a big message they want to send, and they have this really small kind of communications device to send it through. So I think in a way, the what Minhua has just been talking about is the answer to that question about Ma, you know, that his ability to govern independently has already been taken away by Wang Jinping, but then also by the realization that any further action toward significant changes in cross-strait relations will provoke a huge reaction that will make it impossible to push through. So Ma's got to be thinking, there's nothing more I can really do, because the last thing, it doesn't help anybody for me to try to make progress and then have this whole thing blow up again.
On the issues of the Constitution and cohabitation, I would note there's another actor here, and that's the premier.
And
there's a French word term for that, too. But I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, that's actually technically supposed to be who's in the Wang Jinping chair.
Okay, I want to get to questions in one second, but I want to ask each of you about leading indicators. We usually use the term in thinking about the economy and where the economy is going and which indicator is the best for telling you where the economy is going to be in 6 months. So this election, in terms of 2016 and the presidential election, what's the best leading indicator? Is it the number of city outcomes? Is it the total vote for each party? Or is it perhaps turnout, especially for KMT? So I'll start here and go down this way. If we look for one number, what should we look for?
Yes, that's a tough question. And I would have said, like this time yesterday, look at Taichung City, because Taichung City was shaping up to look like a more KMT-DPP showdown. But then I read Frozen Garlic, the blog that Nathan Batto at Academia Sinica Institute for Political Science runs. And he said that was how he was seeing it until he went down there and listened to the discourse in the town. And now he says that vote seems to be really more about Hu Jicheng's, that's Jason Hu's performance after 13 years running the city and now the combined city, that again, it's local issues. So, you know, my bellwether kind of blew on me. So I think perhaps, though, overall turnout and certainly how Sean Lien does in Taipei, I mean, that's the testing ground for a kind of Ma-centric KMT and a top-down policy or political strategizing, that if that's a disaster for the KMT, then that's a really bad sign. If they're able to pull out even a decent loss, then that's less catastrophic.
Yeah, it's a tough question for me. Remember 4 years ago, 2010, the San County City Magistrate elections, actually, in terms of popular votes, won over the blue side. But eventually, in 2012, Ma got reelected. And so, in 2010, and that time, after the county, the local election, a lot of people had feeling that Ma probably lose the reelection. So, I don't know. I just feel the Taichung as well as Taipei City
mayoral campaign actually is a key indicator for us to look at, because those two places supposed to be the blue more than green, but somehow the blue candidate cannot persuasively to mobilize the voters to vote for them, even there are some turned into the supporter independents or green candidates. And that situation might change depending on which candidates will run for the 2016 presidential races. They may matter a lot of differences, but if candidates lose badly, the candidates need to consider how come they lose those two cities which they have a 55 versus 45 advantage. So, I mean, they got to really serious think about this. Let me just have a word about the premier. Jiang Yihua actually is my longtime colleague in National Taiwan University. He used 5 years to become a fund professor, become the premier. So he's a fattest, take the elevator to the power centers. But all the power actually coming from Ma. And I think a lot of local politicians just don't think that's persuasive enough for Jiang to have the grasp of that big seats in the power centers. I mean, so in Taiwan system, because the vote accountants was taken out at the Li Denghui periods, then there is the premier actually literally just the chief of staff for the president, functionally speaking. And so I think Ma really needs to think about if Kennedy lose the elections, what the presidential election candidates that Kennedy should have in order to turn the disadvantageous political situation around. Otherwise, Kennedy is not looking good in terms of 2016.
Alex? I would concur with both. I think the Taipei election for me would be how close the vote ends up with, because that is normally quite a blue territory. But Taichung to me is still very, very important. An indicator to me of the central Taiwan is that Tsai Ing-wen has been campaigning quite a bit in the central to south area. It's the Taichung to me is more like this is where the blue and the green kind of mixes, and how teal is it going to be, or how how sky blue is it going to be? I think my feeling is that if Lin Jialong gets that spread, I have a feeling that 2016 that will give us quite a lot about what's happening, because in the 2012 election, they were KMT was concerned about the Taichung situation as well, because it's always that area where in the blue and the green kind of just mixes, and I feel that if Lin Jialong is able to turn it around, and it's really quite bad for KMT. My feel is I think KMT will see their support. Well, DPP will be just north of Zhoushui River, you know, which is quite a bit of a step for the DPP to break into that territory. That's my feeling anyway. But the two elections, Taipei, how close, and how large in the Taichung area?
Well, I'm not sure, because I think Taipei is really about the Lian family and its role in Taiwan politics. And as you say, Taichung is about Jason's tenure. Okay, we have a lot of smart people in the audience, and so I want to turn the discussion over to them. So I would ask you, once I recognize you, to wait for the mic and then identify yourself, and then let us know to whom your question is addressed among people on the panel. So we have a question right here.
Morning, Richard. It's Alex Lai with United Daily News of Taiwan.
Hold the mic a little bit closer.
Okay. Yeah, Alex Lai with...
Mic on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Alex Lai with United Daily News of Taiwan. I have two questions for you and Shelley. The first one is, according to the poll, it's widely believed that Ke Wen-je would win the you know, he's the independent candidate for the race of Taipei mayor. What do you think if Kerwin-Zer win, he had win, and do you think the third party, I mean the, you know, have the room to play in Taiwan's political landscape?
So that was for Shelley and
you.
And the second question is, DPP maybe win the 9-1 election. What do you think the message would be delivered to, you know, to China and United States, and how would United States and China respond to this kind of development? Thank you.
As far as Kerwin-Zer goes, there is a desire and a demand for a new kind of political option, but I am not sure that he will have the sort of leadership potential to mobilize and create that certainly as a political party. I mean, and in a way, my colleagues will disagree, but it seems to me that it's a missed opportunity for the DPP to have that seat potentially occupied by someone who is in fact not a kind of central figure in the DPP. You know, why can't the DPP find someone to run for the most important flagship mayor? That, you know, that was Chen Shui-bian's stepping stone to the presidency. How did this happen that the DPP doesn't have a candidate of its own? And so one possibility is, and I think this is what the DPP is kind of trying to do, and it's implicitly what we've done on the panel, is to absorb him into the DPP and count his votes as DPP votes. I think Richard's right. They're mostly anti-Lien family votes. And there are other people who have won important elections for the same reason, I think. But that leaves the second possibility, which is that he could become the leader of this new political force. I just don't get any sense, though, of him as a person or a politician as having the potential to create a new national party. On the other hand, it puts pressure on the DPP to maybe make more efforts to become what it is that, you know, the space that's opened up politically. Someone needs to go in and fill it, and it may be in some ways helpful for the DPP to have that pressure, you know, that such an important office, they've kind of lost the momentum there. And as for China and the U.S., Richard can...
On your first question, I think that over time, the power of the two-party system is great enough that it will prevail. Now, the two parties do have the question of how they are going to address the challenge of this third force, and I think it is a third force. Do you co-opt it, or do you hope it just goes away as young people get older? I don't know, but you know, we have problems with third party movements in our own society, but you know, after a while, they go away. I think it wouldn't be good for Taiwan if you had a situation where you had three presidential candidates all running at the same time. One is an independent, and then one gets elected with less than 50% of the vote. I don't think that's something that Taiwan needs right now. As for China and the United States, it's highly hypothetical. I think China will continue doing what it has already begun doing, and that is to lay some boundaries or lines as to what it regards as acceptable concerning perhaps ruling parties in Taiwan, but certainly policies of whoever gets elected. And I think some of what Xi Jinping has been up to in the last few months is in that area. Our default response is to enhance communication with the party that seems to be rising. That's what we did after the 1997 election when the DPP did very well. And so one might say that the United States was more ready for Chen Shui-bian than anybody else. Do either of you want to comment on the sort of two-party, three-party, third force?
Just a quick one on the party system. I don't think, mainly because there's a mechanical effect that's happening here of the electoral system itself, such that the electoral system forces in one way, and if you're familiar with the, you know, with the Taiwan electoral system, it advantages the two large parties a lot. So it's quite difficult to for a third party. There's actually lots of third parties in Taiwan, but to become a major challenge to this two large parties. So there's a mechanical effect. And then the other, in the political science literature, we talk about the importance of political cleavages and the fact that in this sense, in Taiwan, the prevail so far, the main cut is still the unification and independence idea. So it still falls largely on this on much more easily translated into a two party. So whether a third cleavage, a new cleavage comes in, would see how it happens. How the sunflower movement develops over time. Are there political entrepreneurs within Taiwan that can take advantage of that to create this force? And I don't know if Cohen's is actually ready to do that yet, just yet. Anyway, so third party still a little bit not there, I don't think.
I want to add observations about the independence. I mean, Cohen's phenomenon. I think Cohen's probably don't realize what's waiting ahead for him if he wins the elections, because Taipei City has the greatest physical powers in all Taiwan local government, is can even competing with the central government, and there are a lot of seats, a lot of resources, a lot of political appointees that waiting for him to fill it. So I don't know. There are a lot of people surrounding Cohen's. I would say. A slightly greater number in the penguin side, but there are also some pen blue sides. I wouldn't use other labels to label those guys, but they are not institutionally and politically well supported at this moment. So once Cohen won the elections, I think sooner or later he got to have a political alliances, either in a certain faction inside penguin or certain faction inside the pen blue. He could maintain independent. To kind of maneuver a little bit to maintain his own independence. But I think there are a lot of great challenges for him, not mentioned to become a third party.
Anybody towards the back have a question? The woman right there. I don't want to give preference to people in the front just because they're in the front. Yes.
Hi, I'm Tracy Huang with CMI International. I have two really quick questions. The first one's for Alex. You all discussed in depth sort of the sunflower movement and how that's been affecting the local elections. One thing that has been less covered by the media, and be really interested in your input, is that there's a lot of grassroots candidates that have come out this year for the District Lijiang elections. How much do you think, if those are elected based on their platform, how much change do you think that really will have on the local elections? And the second question to all of you is, a lot of people talked about how mobilizing the youth to go back to vote is a big thing. In past elections, they talked about absentee voting, and I understand there's obviously a lot of concern about how that system could be done. But if that system is put into place and there is such a big overseas population of Taiwanese, as well as people studying in other cities that never registered to vote locally, what do you think that would make in terms of a change for Taiwan's electoral politics? Thank you.
The big questions. Do you want to?
On the Lijiang, wow, that's a... so far, I don't think in the Lijiang particularly, it's quite dominated by traditional blue politicians, really. In fact, in those type of elections, it's very, very local. And a lot of this has to deal with really mundane things, too. But the Lijiang also holds a lot of power. For example, just simple things like, you know, somebody wants to study in this particular school and have to, you know, you know, I mean, just the approval and getting all those signed. So quite a bit of influence in the local area. It can affect the mayor's ability to actually be effective at the local area, but it's still, you know, my impression of it's always been still quite held by the blue. They're more blue than green as far as that particular group is concerned. So, you know, I've not been particularly following that that election, but my impression has always been that it's really quite old style politics there.
And I think the fact that I've heard the same thing, that some of the Sunflower activists decided that the way to follow through on their ideals is to enter politics at this most basic level. And I think that that is another illustration of their idealism. And it's easy for us to look at that and call it naive, but I think it's also admirable that rather than saying, I'm going to, you know, become famous and try to run for a legislature as a famous celebrity from Sunflower Movement, to, you know, their vision is that the community must be recreated from the bottom up in a new way with new values and taking care of the environment, taking care of people in need. It is a really admirable vision. And I think that their willingness to take on those really boring, thankless, you know, department chair kind of jobs is a sign of their sincerity. Whether it'll be effective as a kind of tool of political activism, I don't know. But you have to respect their willingness to do it, I think.
Anybody want to take on the question of absentee voting?
I have some colleagues working on different scenario absentee. Some only through e-voting and some online, or there's certain machines that you can use. And I don't know how different scenario now is planned in the Central Election Committee now. They all have, at the planning stage. But what I'm seeing this is that we now all focus on Sunflower Movement. We forget another generations, which is about my generations. My generation about coming out to the society, late 1990s, and my classmates, in terms of salary entry levels, is about 50% more than now the entry level salary in Taiwan. But in that mid ages, their job all kind of moved to China. So what I'm saying is that, for example, in my class, there are 55 of us, they are around 15 to 20s. They're constantly, living in China or traveling in China. I mean, my generation have another view about the economic, about other political views, and they kind of not agreeing with the younger generations. And if absentee voting actually opened up for overseas, I mean, there are a lot of scenarios. Overseas probably is the last one. But if that opening, it would probably change the election result a lot, because now we all listen to the Sunflower Movement because the publicity, but we are not listening to those silent generations. We are busy, my classmates are busy running in the third in China to running their business or their career. So, it's really amazing, because when I listen to my students, what they say, I almost come up spontaneously with some answer, but I hesitate saying it because it's too crude. And I just keep silence. Yeah.
But your people are even hard to find in a survey. I mean, sometimes you look at the survey, the age breakdown, and there's like significantly fewer respondents at certain age categories. And you have to ask yourself, is this because you can't survey them because they're in China? And if you can't survey them because they're in China, that doesn't mean that they're not participating in Taiwan politics. They're just omitted from the survey. I don't know if you guys who do a lot of survey research find that, but it looks that way to me when I read some of these polls. And I don't see how it could not be so, because you're right. The demographic that's in China is pretty specific.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I think I'll just throw this out. I think that if you combine as you have to do for Taiwan, the issue of absentee voting and the issue of dual citizenship, it casts a different light on it. Did you have a question, John? And then I'll go to Mike.
Have a question for you, Richard. You have been talking about U.S. interest in Taiwan elections, and you have always stressed that the U.S. will not take sides, right, correctly. So I was wondering, during these elections, is there any U.S. interest that people like you are looking at? If there is, what is it? Thank you.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, it's always good for us to understand Taiwan politics as well as we can, including local politics. You know, how much you can interpret about the future based on these results is an open question, and I think all of us have been a little bit guarded in over-interpreting that. I think that perhaps the most important thing for the United States about these elections is something we haven't talked about really, and that is, what does it say about the maturation and the consolidation of Taiwan's democratic system? Because, you know, that needs to take place at all levels of the political system. Anybody else want to? No. Mike. And then I'll go right here, and or I'll go back right behind you.
Thanks, Richard. I'm Mike Fonte. I'm the director of the DPP's mission here in Washington. DPP, of course, is going to march on to victory after victory. There's no doubt about that, right? But I really do have a question. Clearly, the national implications that we wanted to talk more about, perhaps, of these elections, if I understand it right, President Ma has instituted that he will remain chair because he is also the president during this period. But there will be this immense fight, it seems to me, between Wang Jinping and the more localization people, perhaps, and President Ma going forward. You've got LY nominations, particularly for the proportional votes. You've got Eric Zhu, probably the best candidate. He would be a very difficult candidate to fight, I think, from a DPP perspective. But would he get the nomination if Ma has this ongoing struggle? So there are a lot of implications I see. And clearly, you mentioned that the leaders weren't willing to push the Sunflower Movement. Seems to me Wang Jinping played a very sly fox role there, right? He was able to protect them from the police and keep them going. So, but anyhow, that fight will continue, it seems to me. So what's the implications as we go forward? What do you see? What do you see are the implications?
Yeah, I think it's a really tough time for the KMT. And I think that a lot of the, you know, if people want to talk about international implications, implications for the PRC, implications for the U.S., it's the looking toward 2016. And in, if history is any guide, the more important losses the KMT suffers in 2 weeks' time, the more chaos will be unleashed within the KMT, and the more pressure there will be for Ma to step aside, let other people make the decisions. And I don't think that he and the people around him are prepared to step aside. I don't think any president can really imagine truly, because if you step back from politics, you have to step back from policy too. So I think you're right that, or the implication that you're making there is correct, that the real excitement starts the day after the election. And it's certainly important happening in both parties, but it will be particularly exciting in the KMT. And the 2016 election, especially the presidential election, but also the legislative elections, is being keenly observed from mainland China. And they are intensely worried, I would submit, about the possibility of the DPP returning to power. They do not have a real good idea of how they can handle that. So yes, I think the real fun starts on, you know, December 1st.
I'm going to go to the person in the back who had your hand up. Did you have your hand up? Yes, you. Nana, right behind you. That one.
Hi, my name is Yu Dacho. I'm a second-year master's student here in the Elliott School, GW. A lot of interesting questions have been raised. I want to ask a rather easy question that's open to all the panelists. It is rather a secondary issue in this election, but it has been raised a lot of times. And until yesterday, there was another news about this. It's about the battle on the web internet, the web army issue. Like, they are criticizing the both campaigns, and especially in Taipei City, because it's the most the competition there is really interesting right now. So it's criticizing that both campaigns, saying that both sides are utilizing all these web armies to, you know, creating some bad issues and topics and criticizing each other. I would like to know, like, all the panelists, your ideas about the web army thing and how would the internet, like, separate, like Professor Huang just mentioned about the different generations have different minds towards the political environment in Taiwan. And I would like to know, and there's also something that on the internet is happening right now. It's like people supporting the Pan-Blue Alliance are like some sort of like the generations like Professor Huang had mentioned, like they entered society in the late, like, 1990s. And people supporting the Pan-Green camp on the internet is more like a younger generation. So there's a separation on the internet, especially on the generation. And I would like to know, like, the panelists' ideas and opinions on, like, how would the web army thing, like, affect the election this time. Thank you.
Any thoughts?
I'll do a very quick stab. Just a quick stab. I don't know. I think this particular digital divide, in one way that you mentioned, I think the question is oftentimes what we always ask is how does web participation or participation in blog actually translate to votes? So that's the big question. You see a lot of people who are madly typing and blogging every time, you know, but the question is, do they come, you know, do they actually go out and vote? So I'm not quite sure the translation of that, because and we also know that oftentimes the first time voters and younger voters tend to not vote as high in proportion. So that's a question. It's a lot of excitement happening on the web, but does that translate to vote? I'm still not sold.
Yeah, I think what you raise is the generation justice, generational justice questions. But I would see it as the challenges for different generations, because in different generation, for example, my generation, almost everyone met the mid-age crisis because their job just canceled and moved to the China, and they got to move whole families. So, but a reply to your question, I think the web ages started from my generation. About now, under 50s, they all they all good at using internet. But it's just a matter of whether they have time and energy to engage in the web politics or not. And my research basically is about the web usage and political participation. I find the more open you use the web, probably will lower your likelihood to vote, other things being equal. So I'm not sure. It's just very general, patterns that I see. But there's another aspect of that. The KMT used to hire the PR company to do the web advertising things. And DPP, good at mobilizing activists to do that instead of paying for PR companies to do that. So there's the differences, yeah.
Any comments? Lady right here had a question. Yeah. Up here? The mic? Oh, okay.
I'm Stella Renjong from Stimson Center, the Taiwan program there. I want to go deeper for the absentee voting system. As you mentioned, and that question mentioned before, it is a problem to motivate young voters to go back to vote. As Professor Huang mentioned before, it is also really difficult to have those Taiwan businessmen in the mainland right now to go back to vote. Actually, it is kind of like a political strategy from the DPP or the call campaign group to criticize that the Lian campaign strategy is is to go to Shanghai and offer them the tickets, you know, the flight tickets to go back to Taiwan to vote. That is a problem for the current voting system because you cannot just voting by mail or register online to vote. But my question is about, like, what is the politics behind the regulations and current mechanism of the voting system? I'm not sure. Is that similar to here in the U.S. that actually the State Department, they are in charge of all those regulations, like how you can vote and at what time you can vote and where you can vote. The State Department means that it is more likely to be charged by the Republicans party right now. What is the scenario where the situation in Taiwan is in charge of by the DPP or the KMT?
Okay, so far what I understood is, because I have some colleagues working on that, personally I'm not involved. But what I understood is that mostly it's technical issues. Do you really trust the machine? Do you really trust the system, how absentee ballots develops? Do people can accept that kind of results from absentee, that they can swing the elections? And mostly it's a focus on technical detail in the Central Election Committee. They have planning committee to discuss about that. In fact, the chair of the Central Election Committee is Liu Yi, so he's a long time very famous political scientist in Zhengzhou University. Some people kind of label him light green professor. So far I don't see that much politics involved. But it's a different matters when you refer to the Xiang Lian side to mobilize the Taiwan business people from Shanghai back to. I mean, we have some political science studies about that, about the Taiwan business votes. It's about 7-3 out of 10. I mean, 70% probably will vote for the blue and 30 for the green. The margin is not that much. Consider the numbers of people who can actually afford the costs, the opportunities, costs that they put their business aside and come back to Taiwan. So I would see that influence so far in political science is minimum, unless the election is really close to call. Otherwise, that part of advantage Peng Bru trying to have, I don't think will capitalize. I mean, they got to narrow down the gap, but so far it's still double digit, right? So I don't think that will affect much.
Concerning U.S. practice, the Caucasians on this panel believe that this is a state level responsibility, that each state sets the rules for everything having to do with elections, including absentee ballots. Okay. There may be a small federal role, but it really is a state level responsibility. Garrett?
Garrett Van Der Weis, editor of Taiwan Communique. I have a question for Professor Tan on the Taipei elections. I saw an analysis by Sun Wendy. I think he's from Australia. You may know him, next to New Zealand. But he says that the reason why Coventry is ahead in Taipei are basically twofold, that among the mainlanders in Taipei, and they are the majority, this time about 30% would vote for him in opinion polls. He bases this on TVBS instead of 10% going for the green under normal circumstances. And the other reason is that in the age group of 40, goes in this case more for green than for blue. Would you agree with such an analysis?
I think that's quite a good analysis, actually. I've also been speaking to colleagues who are also observing this particular election. I think what Kowenza in one way represents, and that's one reason why it's quite difficult for the traditional blue in one way, is because you have one that is a traditional political family, and you have one that is essentially represents the working, you know, father, parents are school teachers, and then he's, you know, the traditional Taiwan story of mobility, right? And in one way, it captures a lot of the working class blue. You know, it captures that idea of the working class blue, 公教, as they call it. You know, I mean, and it attracts that particular vote. So right now, if you listen to what Lian Zhan has been saying, and even Hao Bo Chun, it's almost like,
you know, he's actually, his underwear is actually green, you know, that he's actually closet green and stuff. But that's actually simplifying the whole story, right? I mean, because nothing sticks. But if you want to attract that working class blue, you scare them by saying this is actually a green, you know, he's actually independence guy. But what he's actually, but Cohen has been quite clear on what he's trying to say, and he keeps on saying, "I'm working here as a surgeon, as a doctor. I see life and death situation. I know when people don't have that money to have that type of health care, and I'm in the front line of taking care of people in Taipei." And then the more recent one is in Lianchan saying that he actually is a political family. And his grandfather is, working for the Japanese government, and you know, so he's not actually this, you know. Again, it's trying to slowly chip on that idea that he is not working class. But in one way, I think that's the within the Kuomintang coalition, you are actually seeing this working class, blue collar, blue, you know, getting attracted to this guy's story. And I would say that would be a something that I agree with that particular look. I think it's a class politics kind of within the Kuomintang that's splitting this vote.
And that is really important because class politics is also, it's not exactly class, it's sort of the class politics of the 21st century is what the Sunflowers are talking about. You know, they're talking about fine, your generation can all go to China and make money, but what about us? Yeah. Who's thinking about how we're supposed to live? What is our future? This is a crisis that is occurring in every advanced industrial democracy, but it is occurring with particular intensity in Taiwan because everything occurs with particular intensity in Taiwan. But that also suggests that what I said earlier about the DPP and Kuo-Wen-Je is probably wrong, because actually it may be that Kuo-Wen-Je can attract some blue voters that would not have been available to a DPP candidate, but nonetheless separate the KMT from that office for at least 4 years and maybe longer. And so that the DPP then can kind of grow into that. So it may actually be good for the DPP not to have their own candidate. And I don't know, maybe Mike can tell us whether that was strategic on their part to let Kuo-Wen-Je take in that spot. But I think it's important to sort of correct that, because I think my analysis was not as good as yours.
Let me add on a little bit to just clarify, because mostly when we see in Taiwan is that particular cleavage. It's always unification and independence. And in a unification and independence cleavage, this line, the voter base is relatively more fixed. But once you put in a new cross-cutting issue in, and this time around, Kuo-Wen-Je is not saying, I'm green or I'm blue. He's saying, I represent the working class people who actually went through school, you know, we're Xiao Kang family, we're middle class family, you know, parents are school teachers. I went through the ranks and made my, where I am right now is through how I worked hard and, you know, the traditional mobility story. It's a new cleavage. It splits actually much of those KMT line. I mean, it's not easy blue-green, even for DPP, I think. You know?
And how can we know whether this cross-cutting cleavage is powerful or not when it is never offered?
Exactly. Exactly.
As a way of deciding how to vote.
It's never been in Taiwan politics, and this is quite new. So it's interesting in that sense.
Let's see. Dennis.
Yes, I'm Dennis Halpin from SICE. I had a question. The panel seems to have the view of Tip O'Neill, all politics is local, except Professor Rigger did mention Beijing watching the situation closely. I was wondering about Hong Kong. I mean, in the election we just had in the U.S., it seemed the elections were going to be local until the video of Mr. Foley being beheaded, and then ISIL and Ebola. And I've seen in roll call in the Japan Times has written about exit polls showing Asian American voters swung to the Republicans because of national security issues and maybe also women voters with children. So my question about Hong Kong, I mean, these events have been taking place this fall. Xi Jinping made that statement a few months ago about one country, two systems being a model for Taiwan. So I had two questions for the panel. First, does that have any influence on voters in these elections? And second, my question is about Beijing. Do the Taiwan elections or concern about Taiwan public opinion affect the way that Beijing is handling its issue with Hong Kong and the Occupy Central movement there?
Maybe I'll take the first shot. I was in Taiwan a few weeks ago, and actually your Hong Kong question was one that I wanted to pose to people, and I talked to very few people, frankly, but there are people who, you know, look at how Taiwan is looking at Hong Kong, and their impression, which was a bit of a surprise to me, was there's actually not much attention being paid. That Taiwan people always knew that Hong Kong was Hong Kong and Taiwan was Taiwan, and any effort to impose the same sort of formula on both isn't appropriate. When the protest movement was at its height, or when the situation was most tense, there was media attention, but that seems to have been died off. On your second question, I would say that the relationship is the other way, that Beijing is probably worried about how events in Hong Kong might, over time, reconfirm and strengthen Taiwan people's aversion to one country, two systems. And, you know, they've had to take the approach they did, or they believe they had to take the approach they did on Hong Kong because it was the pressing issue. But it means that Taiwan is just further and further away on the horizon. Anybody else?
Just a quick one on the attention. I've been in Taiwan since October, mid-October. Really, when you turn on the news, most of the news is about food safety. You know, it's almost, to me, I've been going to Taiwan every October to January, and it seems to me that the problem has never solved itself, and every time I'm eating in a restaurant and you see the news, I said, oh my gosh, am I, you know, eating something that I supposed, you know, not supposed to be eating? But every week or every day, it's a new thing that they've found. So the attention has been there, and very few news on the Occupy Central, unless you switch it to CNN. But the TVBS, the Sanli, you know, all these local news, very few devoted to that.
One last question. Tina.
Yeah, hi, Tina Chong with the Voice of America. My question is, you know, coming to the last stretch of the voting day, do you see, how do you see money play in this campaign? Money, I mean, war chest. We all know that KMT has a big war chest. Is it having any effect yet? Do you see any influence on either camp?
If you mentioned the direct bribe of vote buying practice, I mean, there are some local levels still doing it, but it's getting tougher and tougher because they got to know whom to buy, when to buy, how to buy, and perfectly execute it, and they still got money. So what I understood from the recent research is that the vote buying practices at a very high level has already kind of stopped. And the county level, well, there are some counties still existed, but only marginal. But at a very local level, like ward or village level, it could exist because it's much easier to execute it for the candidates. They know when and how to buy it. But if you mention, a lot of money can throw into the media, that kind of effect have already been neutralized because Taiwan, the media, has already very stabilized that the pan-green, pro-green and pro-blue sides. And I don't see if you throw in more money can change this kind of basic situations. So I don't think if we have shocking event before the election, it will be related to money. It supposed should be related to other events. But after two gunshots, 319 and the Xiangling's gunshot, I don't think there are... I cannot think of others more surprising event what happens before the election. So
certainly hopes.
Yes, we hope so.
Anybody else?
No.
I mean, it does raise an interesting question because Taiwan's basically one media market, particularly for television. And so how do you use media in a local election without wasting a lot of money sending out a message that's broadcast all over?
And the truth of the matter is, to your point, Dennis, about all politics is local, this election really is just a local election. I mean, none of these people have any power. Some of them have ambition to be national politicians, but it's not like a legislative election. I mean, these are like, you know, the big thing that Jason Hu is in trouble for in Taichung, you know, the reason why the second most closely watched election of this panel might not go his way is because they got, and every Washington, D.C. resident can fully understand why this is such a bad thing, they got buses instead of a train. So, you know, that really is local politics at its most real. He couldn't get him a train. He got him a bus instead. Out with the old, in with the new.
Okay. Thanks to each of you, Alex, Minhua, Shelley, for a great discussion. Thank you for all your terrific questions. We stay tuned for November 29th, and I'm sure there'll be another round of interpretation and over-interpretation when that happens. So thank you very much.